Welcome back to Pastor Rick's Daily Hope. Hey, if you're brand new with us, we're glad that you found us. Every day we're going to dive into Rick's teachings, and today we're continuing the series called How God Meets Your Deepest Needs. Now, in this series, Rick explores how the different Hebrew names of God that are found in the Bible actually illustrate the special ways that God cares for us. His constant presence, His purpose for your life, and His preparation for a place for you in heaven. And now let's get right to Rick with part one of a message called, When the Odds Are Against You.
Wise people make calculated risks. They consider the odds before they make the investment. The investment of time, energy, money, reputation. You want to know, is the cause worth the cost? Is the reward worth the risk? You need to consider the odds in life. This week I did a little research on what the odds are, and of course, it was no surprise that Las Vegas has the absolute worst odds. You may as well just give me your money. Don't, you know, save the time. If you play roulette, the casino makes 5.26% down the hatch, which means if you're betting on a $5 table and you do 30 spins an hour and you play for 4 hours, you're going to walk away from the roulette table $31 poorer than when you walked up to it. That's just an established fact. You're not going to beat it. Now, if you play slot machines, casinos make twice that amount, at least, sometimes three and four times that. And so it's just like putting money in a machine saying, here it is, it's yours, take it, take it. You are six times more likely to be struck by lightning than to win the odds in the lottery. In fact, if you drive 10 miles to buy a California lotto ticket, you are three times more likely to be killed in an auto accident than to win at California Lotto. There's no way you're going to win. So, you know, save your money. Here are the odds are on how you will die. The odds are that you will die in a car wreck, 1 out of 100. That you will die by murder, the odds are 1 out of 300 in America, that you will die by murder. That you will die in a fire, 1 out of 800. That you'll die by electrocution, 1 out of 5,000. That you will die in a flood, it's 1 out of 30,000, and in a tornado, 1 out of 60,000. That you will die by a venomous bite or sting, the odds are getting way out there, 1 in 100,000. And the odds that you will be killed by lightning is 1 in 2.8 million, 1 in 2.8 million. By the way, the world record for being struck by lightning is a guy named Roy Sullivan, who's a forest ranger. He's been struck seven times by lightning. Now, he has no hair anymore, and he answers to the name Matilda, but the odds that you will die by food poisoning, now this is very amazing, 1 out of 3 million. I would have thought far more people died from food. I mean, I've been to some restaurants that I would beat the odds on that, I know. Now, sometimes it seems the odds are against you, and sometimes it just seems that life has stacked the deck of cards for you to lose. Brian had a day like that a while back out of Provo, Utah. It's a true story. First, his apartment became flooded from a broken pipe in the apartment above his. So his manager told him to go rent a water vacuum. That's when he discovered that he had a flat tire. He changed it, went inside again to phone a friend for help, but standing in water and grabbing the phone, the electrical shock he got so startled him that it accidentally ripped the phone off the wall. Now, by the time he was ready to leave, water damage had swelled his door jam tight shut, and he had to yell to a neighbor to come and kick the door down. While this was all going on, somebody stole Brian's car. True story. However, it was almost out of gas, so he found it a few blocks away. But he still had to push it to a gas station to fill it up. That evening, Brian attended a military ceremony at his university, and he injured himself severely when he somehow sat on his bayonet. I don't want to picture that. Which had been tossed onto the front seat of his car. Doctors were able to stitch up his wound, but no one was able to resuscitate Brian's four canaries, who were crushed by falling plaster from the wet apartment ceiling. And when he got back from the university, after Brian slipped on the wet carpet again and injured his tailbone, he said he began to wonder if, quote, God wanted me dead but just kept missing. You ever had a day like that? Do you ever feel like everybody is ganging up against you? Everything, everyone is conspiring to make it a bad day or week or month or life? Today, I want us to look at what are the odds and how do you face them when they're against you? What do you do when you're facing insurmountable, overwhelming problems? One of the names of God in Hebrew is Jehovah Nissi, which says, I am the God who defends you. I am the God who protects you. I am your banner. I defend you when the odds are against you. Now, one of the great stories, examples of this in the Bible, is 2 Chronicles chapter 20, one of my favorite stories in the Bible. If you have a Bible, you might open there. If you don't, it's okay, because all the major verses are there on the outline. But the story goes that three enemy nations of Israel decided to team up against Israel and go to war against Israel at the same time. And so they're going to kind of tag team Israel into submission. You would think that this would be a story of defeat and devastation, but in the true ending, Jehoshaphat wins. He beats the odds because he did everything right. Now, it's a wonderful story that explains God's protection over the nation of Israel, but God doesn't put these stories in the Bible just to teach us history lessons. There are principles that are there that we are to learn how to handle overwhelming odds. How to handle when you're in a battle of life. And some of you are in a financial battle right now. And some of you are in a relationship battle. And some of you are in a battle with a disease. And these same principles apply to the battles of life you're going to face this week. Even when it seems like there's no way out. Even when it seems like you're going under for the last time. What do you do? Number one, turn to God first. Turn to God first. Before you do anything else, you go directly to God. You don't pass go, you don't collect 200. You go straight to God and say, God, I am overwhelmed. You ask, God, what do you think about this situation? And you try to get God's perspective on the problem. The reason why is because, of course, your perspective is quite limited. While God's perspective is eternal, he can see the beginning and the end. He can see past, present, and future all at once. And so you need to get a larger picture of what the problem really is that seems so overwhelming to you right now. Now, as I said last week, too often we see prayer as a last resort rather than as our first thought. I mean, prayer is usually something you do way down the line after you've tried everything else. And some people say, well, I guess all we can do now is pray. Like, that's the last thing. You know, you've tried all the major things that should work. Well, all we can do now is pray. And your friend says, has it come to that? You know, is it so hopeless that all we can do is pray? Listen, prayer should be your first choice, not your last resort. And if you want God to help you overcome the odds in any area of your life, you need to turn to him first. Notice verse 1 and 3 of 2 Chronicles 20. After this, the armies of the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Minuites, which, by the way, are related to the parasites, and not to mention the stalactites and the stalagmites, of course, we're all familiar with them. But these three enemies declared war on Jehoshaphat. He was afraid, so he decided to ask the Lord what to do. Now, notice it says, after this. Would you circle those two words? After this, there came a battle. After what? Well, you have to go back and read the previous chapter. And in 2 Chronicles 19, there is a story of a great national revival, a spiritual awakening. There's great joy in the country. There's prosperity. There's blessing. It's good times. And it says, after this, there came a battle. Now, we all know this principle, that with every high, there is also a low. With every mountaintop, there is a valley. And after every victory, there is always a letdown. And with every blessing, there comes a testing. Now, you may not be in a battle right now, but you're going to be in one tomorrow, or the next day, or the day after that. Because you may be in a time of blessing right now, you're soaring, you're on the mountaintop, but you're going to come down eventually. So you need to expect blessings in your life, but you also need to expect battles in your life. You're going to have difficult times. Now notice the king's first reaction. It says he was fearful. It says he was afraid. Now that's a normal reaction. That's quite reasonable. You hear about three enemy nations teaming up, ganging up against you, and they're going to come pound you at one time. It's normal to be afraid. Listen, the things that are overwhelming your life right now, your problem is not that you're afraid of them. It's not your fear. That's not your problem. Your problem is what you do with your fear. When you're afraid in a situation, you feel overwhelmed, stressed out, the odds against you, do you let that fear demotivate you, destabilize you, depress you, discourage you? Does it cause you to want to just throw in the towel and say, I give up, even before the battle starts? You want to say, oh, well, you know, I can't make this work. Why should I even try? Why even put forth the effort? Why even go into battle? Because I'm going to lose, so I give up. The odds are stacked against me. I'm not even going to try. Never let an impossible situation intimidate you. Let it motivate you. Say, motivate me. How in the world can the problems in my life motivate me? Let it motivate you to pray more. Let it motivate you to trust more. Let it motivate you to expect more from God. Let it motivate you to depend more on God. Let it motivate you to get your priorities right, to decide what's not important worth doing. Let it motivate you and turn to God first. Now, that is exactly what this guy did, Jehoshaphat. He headed straight to God. And then number two, he talked to God. You turn to God first, then you talk to God about your situation. Now, there is no problem that is too big, and there is no problem that is too small for you to pray about. And in verse 5 there in 2 Chronicles 20, it says, King Jehoshaphat went and stood before them, that was the entire nation, and he prayed aloud. That's a good thing to do. Sometimes praying aloud keeps your mind focused. When you pray in your mind, have you noticed sometimes your mind wanders? It doesn't do that when you're talking aloud. So sometimes you just need to pray aloud. Now, it is important that when the odds are stacked against you, there is a certain way you need to pray that is different from the way you normally pray. And Jehoshaphat gives us a model example of the three things you need to pray when you feel overwhelmed. First, notice he says in verse 6, "Are you not the God who is in heaven? You rule over all the kingdoms of the nations. Power and might are in your hand, and no one can withstand you." The first thing you do is remind yourself of who God is. I need to remind myself of who God is. Before I talk to God about the problem, before I focus on it, I need to focus on God, and I need to remind myself that God is bigger than the problem that I am facing. And you say, God, you're all powerful. Nothing is too hard for you. With God, all things are possible. You rule over all the kingdoms and nations. The king here is realizing that three enemy nations are coming at him, and yet he stops and he says, God, you're bigger than all the nations. I just want to keep that in mind, that you are bigger than anything I will ever face. So I remind myself of who God is. The second thing is I remind myself of what he's done in the past. And I need to recall the times when God has helped me. And I remember the miracles that he's already done in my life and the way that he's helped me. And in verse 7, he says, "Didn't you drive out those who lived in this land when your people arrived?" He's going all the way back to Moses and Joshua. He said, "Hey, didn't you give us this land? And didn't you do many miracles that got us here in the first place?" And he recalls, and if you read the whole passage there, I hope you'll go read verses 6 to 12, back the whole chapter sometime today. He recalls all the way that God has worked in the past. And he's saying, I know who you are, and I know what you've done in the past. And then number 3, he says, I want you to do it again. Ask God for help now. He says, "Oh God, won't you stop them? How about an instant replay, Lord? How about a repeat performance? Do it again." Earlier in verse 9, it's not there on your outline, he mentions three kinds of situations. He talks about tragedies and physical needs and material needs. He talks about plagues and famine and stuff. He says, you know, God, none of this is too hard for you, and you've helped us in the past, so do it again. His prayer is actually built around three questions. Are you not? Will you not? Did you not? And will you not? First, he says, are you not God? You're in charge. And the answer is, yes, you are in charge. And you're big enough to handle this. Did you not help us in the past? And the answer to that is, yes, you did help us in the past. And then he said, will you not do it again? Won't you do it again? And the answer is, yes, you'll do it again. Now, that's the way you need to pray when you're overwhelmed. No matter what the situation is, remind yourself first of who God is, remind yourself of what he's done, and ask God to do it again. Once you've done that, now you're ready to talk about your problem. And step three is, tell God exactly how I feel. I need to tell God exactly how I feel. I need to confess my inability and my inadequacy. And I need to be honest if I'm afraid, if I'm scared, if I'm frightened or threatened. And I say, God, this is exactly how I feel. And in verse 12, he says, we are powerless. He's talking to God. This is a prayer. We are powerless against this mighty army that is about to attack us. You ever felt that way? You ever felt powerless? Ever felt that there was a problem in your marriage or in your career or somewhere in your life that you thought, this is overwhelming. There's no way I'm gonna succeed in this. You start the beginning of the week and think, oh, maybe I can handle it. But about Wednesday, you're out of power. And Friday, you're going, I don't know if I can face another week of this. Maybe you felt like this poem. The world had a hopeful beginning, but man spoiled it all by sinning. We trust that the story will end to God's glory, but right now the other side's winning. Ever felt like that? You pick up the newspaper and it looks like the bad guys are winning. We've got kids killing kids in high schools. The moral and spiritual climate of our society is collapsing. And everything around just looks like the bad guys are winning in many ways. And so you just say, God, we're powerless and we don't know what to do. And so you tell God exactly how you feel. Now, it's interesting when you compare this verse 12, where he says, we're powerless, to verse 6, where he says, you have all the power in the world. See, it doesn't matter if I'm powerless, if God has power, because if I put my trust in him, he'll take care of me. I don't have to have power. You don't either. And you don't have to pretend that you do. All you have to do is trust in God, who's got all the power you need. You don't have it. He does. So trust him. And that's where you come to step four. After I have turned to God first, and I've talked to God about the situation, and I told him exactly how I feel, I need to trust God to help me. I need to trust God to help me. The third part of that verse 12 says this. He said, we're powerless against this mighty army that's about to attack us, and we don't know what to do, but our eyes are on you. Circle that phrase, our eyes are on you. You need to trust God to help you. You need to not focus on your problem. You need to focus on God. Now, this is the biggest mistake that people make when they're overwhelmed. When we're overwhelmed, all we tend to see is the problem. We don't look to God. We don't put our eyes on God. We put our eyes on the problem. I mean, most people, you say, well, how are you doing when they're overwhelmed? And they say, well, I'm doing okay under the circumstances. Under the circumstances. Under the circumstances. What are you doing under the circumstances? Who put you there? Why don't you get on top of the circumstances? Circumstances are like a mattress on your bed. You get on top of them, you'll rest easy. You get underneath them, you're going to suffocate. What are you doing under the circumstances? You put yourself there. It's all what you focus on. If you've been around Saddleback for any length of time, you've heard me say this at least a dozen times. It's one of my favorite quotes. Corrie ten Boom says, if you look at the world, you will be distressed. If you look within, you will be depressed. But if you look at Christ, you will be at rest. It all depends on what you have your eyes on. Now, what are you focusing on right now? If you're discouraged, I'll tell you one thing, it's not God. Because you can't be discouraged and focus on God at the same time. Because you know who he is and you know what he's done and he can help you again. So you do these things. You turn to God first and you talk to him about your problem and you tell him exactly how you feel and you trust him to help you. Now, when you do these things, notice God's response. In verse 15, this is what the Lord says to you. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of this vast army, for the battle is not yours, but God's. I want you to circle that. The battle is not yours, but God's. God says, relax and trust me to help you. Now, look up here a minute. The reason why you're so fatigued all the time and so tired all the time is because you're trying to fight battles that belong to God. That's your biggest problem. You're trying to fight battles that aren't your battle in the first place. They're God's. And when you try to fight them, you're going to get worn out. You see, we assume God's role. We think, I will make this thing work. And we kind of just out of sheer willpower, we put our head down and put our shoulder into it and buck up and say, you know, just out of my own willpower and energy, I will save this marriage. I will turn my kids around. I will resolve my financial difficulties. I will find a life mate. I will make myself a success. And out of sheer willpower, and you're striving and striving and fighting and fighting, and God said, hold, time out. This is not your battle. It's mine. If you belong to me, I'll fight your battle. You see, when I come to Christ and say, Jesus Christ, I want to serve you the rest of your life, the rest of my life. I want you to be my master, and I will be your servant. When I put myself in a servant position to the master God, the master assumes responsibility for all the needs of the servant. If I live in the master's house, he pays for my room and board and insurance and cares for my medical needs and all the other things because I'm serving him. And when I come to Christ and say, I'm yours, he assumes responsibility for my needs. And the battle's not mine anymore. It's his. But see, we don't get this. We try to fight God's battles all the time. And we go out and we work real hard, and we try real hard, and we give it our best shot, and inevitably we fail. And we're disappointed in ourselves. And we come back with our heads bowed and our eyes droopy and our tail between our legs, and we walk into God and say, oh God, I'm so sorry. I've really let you down. I know that I tried hard and I tried to do this and I've made a mess of it and I blew it and I have really let you down. I'm sorry, God. And God says, wait just a minute. Let me clarify this. You didn't let me down because you aren't holding me up. You ever thought about that? You don't let God down because you don't hold him up. God holds you up. You don't hold him up. I don't know how to say it any clearer than this. You cannot disappoint God. Why? Because he already knows everything. He knows every stupid, sinful, dumb thing you've ever done. He also knows every stupid, sinful thing you're going to do already. So it's not going to be a big surprise to him when you end up doing it. Like, wow, how did I miss that one? Golly, I should have thought of that when I created him. Well, guess what? He did. You cannot disappoint God. This is what grace is all about. You don't earn God's pleasure, God's approval. It is a free gift when you trust in his son, Christ. And you don't hold God up, he holds you up. And you don't help God, he helps you. It's not your battle.
I don't know about you, but I am encouraged after that message. And let's keep the encouragement going with a letter from one of our listeners. Here's Rick.
Today I want to share a letter from Paul. He wrote me, Pastor Rick, I've been a listener for over a year now, and I don't really know how else to say this other than that through you, I've grown in my faith, and I've been able to understand the relationship that I can have with Christ, and I'm now living it. And I have seen a transformation in my mother as well, who recently became a devoted listener, and she's growing in her faith and relationship to Jesus. Pastor Rick, I pray for God to continue using you in your service of serving others, bringing God's word around the world for many people to hear the good news of salvation through Jesus Christ. Well, Paul, your letter blesses me as I read all of these letters each day. Thank you for listening to Daily Hope. Thank you for applying the messages in your life. Thank you for sharing them with your mom and with other people. This is what it's all about. Together, we are taking the gospel, the good news, to the whole world. I do my part and you do your part when you pray and you invite and you send and you share the good news with other people and when you're able to support us here too. Thank you, Paul, for your letter. I want you to know we're praying for you today.
You know, a great way to share the good news of Jesus is to share the Daily Hope messages with people who need to hear them. Just go to PastorRick.com. Click on the Listen tab. There you'll find buttons where you can share the message by email, social media, or WhatsApp. That's PastorRick.com. We hope you'll join us next time when we look into God's Word for our Daily Hope. This program is sponsored by Pastor Rick's Daily Hope and your generous financial support.